Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. I'm your host, Ellen Tang, and I am joined by Glenn Schultz, the head of agency mortgage strategy and prepayment modeling for MUFG. Today is Tuesday, October 6, 2020. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ellen. Thank you for having me today.
Today, we're going to discuss the agency mortgage prepayment landscape. But first, I would like to briefly ask you about Katahdina, MUFG's proprietary agency mortgage prepayment model. Can you tell us a little bit about this program?
Yeah, sure. We created Katahdina to report and manage mortgage desk risk. Katahdina is a unique model in that it is the only, at least to my knowledge, machine learning long-term prepayment model in production today that is used to report and manage mortgage trading desk risk. But Katahdina is not really a single prepayment model in the traditional sense. Rather, Katahdina is 38 bespoke prepayment models. There are one model for each convexity sector within the agency MBS market. So by leveraging the power of machine learning, we're able to create many bespoke prepayment models that both the risk and desk use.
That's interesting, Glenn. Does prepayment modeling using machine learning differ from traditional prepayment modeling? And if so, how?
Oh, yes. Prepayment modeling using machine learning techniques differs substantially from traditional prepayment modeling. So in the traditional setting, the modeler is really focused on developing functions which describe the economics of borrower repayment, such as refinancing incentive, equity takeout refinancings, which are driven by home price appreciation, housing turnover rates, and a phenomenon called burnout. The functions within the model are additive, and together those functions describe borrower prepayment behavior. In machine learning algorithms, it's a little bit different. The machine learning algorithms actually excel at the identification of nonlinear behavior and interactions between variables. As a result of these particular strengths, in a machine learning setting, the modeler's focus shifts from the design of econometric functions to the design of data pipelines, because the machine learning algorithms are only as good as the integrity and relevancy of the data they are providing. So what I call the ML data pipeline actually becomes quite important for the modeling of mortgage prepayments.
Thanks for that overview, Glenn. How did you come up with the name Katahdina? Does it have a special meaning?
Yeah, the name does actually have a special meaning. So the katana is a large curved sword adopted by the samurai in the late 13th century. It's viewed by most historians as the best weapon ever constructed for its purpose. Likewise, we view our machine learning prepayment model in a similar way, the best model constructed for its purpose. So we name the prepayment model Katahdina.
I like that, Glenn. Turning to the prepayment landscape, what are the relevant issues mortgage investors should be paying attention to right now, and why?
Well, like every rates market right now, there's a lot going on in the mortgage-backed securities market. So we're in the middle of a refinancing wave and a pandemic. In a lot of ways, the pandemic itself is the genesis of the refinancing wave. So think about it. First, the risk-off trade at the outset of the pandemic brought the 10-year Treasury down from an already low 1.6% in February to an all-time low of 50 basis points on August 4th of this year. Naturally, this led to a consecutive month-over-month declines in the 30-year mortgage rate, which actually reached its all-time lows just below 3%. And the decline in the mortgage rate actually triggered the current refinancing wave. Then secondly, the refinancing wave is further fueled by technology investments made on the part of mortgage originators and servicers, which has increased their efficiency in processing applications and shortened the timeline between application and closing of the loan. In fact, one of the interesting things that I've noticed is that month over month percentage changes in prepayment rates have actually out outpaced the business day count convection in every month since March, the only exception being the month of May. So what this tells me is that mortgage originators have significantly improved processing time with the use of technology.
Can you explain the business day count convention to our listeners?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So during a refinancing wave, originators are at maximum capacity in terms of their ability to process and put through loans. So the business days in the month becomes a constraint. How many days do you actually have to conduct business? So in the past, it took around 3 weeks or 21 business days to close a loan from application. But due to the technological investments, the number of business days to close an application is down to around 10 days. Now the originator can process twice the number of loans in the period, and the business day count, although still a limiting constraint, becomes less so due to the reduction in processing time. Now, aside from the originator story, there have been policy changes also to ease borrower distress during the pandemic. On the forefront of those right now is borrower hardship forbearance, the adverse delivery fee charged for cash out refinances, which will go into effect on December 1 of this year. And then the GSEs are actually extending the timeline for the delinquency buyouts. So all of these three things, you know, individually and together are going to impact mortgage prepayment and by extension, mortgage valuation. So starting with the first, with respect to borrower hardship forbearance, the question many investors are asking is really how will the borrower behave once the forbearance period ends? So during forbearance, the borrower is still counted delinquency. The delinquency counter continues to move. So they go from 1 month delinquent, 2 month delinquent, non. And then that borrower must make up the payments that are in arrears. So currently the borrower has several options. First, they can make a lump sum payment to become current, which really, in my opinion, is not very likely. Second, the borrower can enter a payment plan, which is somewhat likely, but again, I don't think too likely. Third, the borrower could seek a modification to avoid default. This is possible, but it would impact the borrower's credit score. So I think most borrowers would be adverse to seeking a modification. And then fourth, the borrower can actually choose a subordinated lien option, which essentially allows them to push the payments to the end of the note term or sale of property, and then simply pick up making regular scheduled payments. This, in my opinion, is the most likely choice that most borrowers will make.
So why do you think borrowers will likely choose the subordinated lien option?
Yeah, that's a good question, Alan. I think this is the most likely choice because most borrowers are payment sensitive, not rate sensitive, which means that they care about their out-of-pocket sort of payments. So I like to use a car dealer analogy. The car salesman will almost always ask the customer, if I can get the monthly payment to, you know, sort of an X dollar amount, would you buy this car? And the borrower usually answers, or the customer usually answers, yes. But then the next thing you know, they're driving off the lot with a new car, you know, and a 6 or 7 year term auto loan. So that's an example of a borrower being payment sensitive. Choosing the subordinated lien option is similar in the sense that it reduces the borrower's upfront payment to be reinstated as current. So I think that's where, you know, most people are going to come in, minimize their upfront to become current. So then the next thing we have is the adverse delivery fee that was announced on August 12th. And originally, this was to be effective September 1, right? So an adverse delivery fee, you know, is being applied to cash out refi loans. Now, in and of itself, it's not really a big news, an adverse delivery fee. We've seen them impose those before. But what was really different was the lead time between the announcement and the implementation. That was something that had never been done before. So essentially what had happened is originators had about 30 days, you know, to close their pipeline so that borrowers would not be impacted by this adverse delivery fee. Now, of course, by month end, the GSEs announced that the adverse delivery fee would become effective on December 1, 2020, as opposed to September 1, 2020. Now, the fee itself results in about an additional 12 to 15 basis points on the borrower's mortgage rate, which, you know, really is not enough to dampen refinance activity, given where we are in terms of, you know, the overall national 30-year mortgage rate. But it is sufficient to provide some borrowers the incentive to process a cash out refinance before December 1 to avoid that additional 12 to 15 basis points. So I really expect that this adverse delivery fee is going to provide a tailwind, you know, to cash out refinance activities all the way through December, its imposition in December 1. And then finally, there's the change in the delinquency buyout policy. So that moves from 120 days to 24 months. So essentially what happens is the GSEs buy out loans that are 120 days delinquent, and that shows up as a prepayment to the investor. The change is going to be effective on January 1, 2021, and it actually provides GSEs with greater flexibility in terms of dealing with delinquent loans. Now, when you hear something like from 120 days to 24 months, it sounds, you know, really quite substantive in terms of change. But realistically, given the exceptions that they have and those types of things, it pushes delinquency buyouts from, say, 120 days or 4 months to around 6 to 8 months. But the change really allows kind of the following things. First, the GSEs are going to be able to finance delinquent loans at the pool's note rate. Whereas if the loans are bought out of the pool and held on a balance sheet, then the funding cost would be the GSE's cost of capital. And we know that, you know, under the preferred share purchase, that dividend is around 10%. So their cost of capital is around that neighborhood. And second, it actually allows greater flexibility in the buyout of delinquent loans. So in turn, the GSEs, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, can better manage the idiosyncratic prepayment differences between the two that are due to differing delinquency rates across their cohorts. This is going to allow them to keep relative prepayment rates between the two somewhat aligned and be able to hit the alignment that the FHFA has mandated for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So overall, I don't really expect prepayments to change materially on the aggregate level as a result of this delinquency buyout change, but investors are going to see some differences at the coupon and vintage cohort level.
So Glenn, with all the points that you have just outlined for us, what is your outlook for mortgage prepayment rates going forward?
Oh, sure. Any view on prepayment rates, you know, kind of beyond the next month or so, is largely a view on the direction of interest rates. MUFG's U.S. rate strategist, John Herman's view on interest rates really kind of informs my view in terms of prepayment rates over the intermediate term. So I'll start there. John's forecast for the 10-year Treasury in Q2 2021 is, you know, 1.01%. And then in Q2 2022, he goes to 1.3% in his forecast. And then finally in Q2 2023, which is out there, is 1.6%. So now the question becomes the primary secondary spread, which is the difference between sort of the mortgage rate that borrowers get and the rate on kind of a par securitization pass-through. That's still very wide, and depending on, you know, how you measure it, that's going to be anywhere between 150 to 180 basis points. So together, these two data points suggest that the 30-year mortgage rate will likely range between about 3 and 3.5%. So if that's the case, the current refinance wave and associated prepayment rates are going to likely persist at least through Q1 2021, and then begin to gradually dissipate as the pool of eligible borrowers begins to decline. Of course, against that backdrop, there are still longer term trends to watch, as well as the housing turnover rate, which is just the natural sales rate of the US housing stock. And that's been exhibiting an upward trend. Home price appreciation, which is going to drive, you know, the volume of cash out refinancing, So I think both of these trends will become more important as the refinancing wave begins to dissipate. But they're also going to provide, I think, you know, underlying strength to the prepayment landscape. And so even just at the money, prepayment rates, I believe, are going to be a little bit higher than what investors have been used to in the past.
Thanks so much, Glenn. It was great to hear from you today, and thank you for sharing your insights.
Sure. Thank you for having me, Ellen.
Thank you for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back soon for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.